this one.
Welcome to a special edition of The Rest Is Noise.
When you see that there is more than one thing, open up in a new way, open up on a Monday. You see that there is more than one.
This episode, we're shaking up our regular format to decide the song of 2017. What was your favourite? I sat down for a private chat with each of my six regular contestants about their three tracks of the year. Then, from that pool of songs, they each chose a favourite. The song with the most votes was our Song of the Year. Let's start with Chelis for indie band Madam Sarah Gill.
Everything Now by Arcade Fire.
This isn't the first time this song's been featured on the podcast. Paul took a serious dislike to it earlier in the year.
He really did. Mm. He really slated it, and I thought it was a bit unfair. Because I chose this song because it reminds me of going to Primavera in Barcelona, the festival, in June. And we were wandering around on the first day, I think, and there was this weird stage being set up which wasn't on any of the maps. And there was nothing to say what was going on apart from a cryptic little sign that sort of shaped like a globe with the letters EN. And my friend Pieter very quickly realised that it was to do with a new Arcade Fire single.
Right.
So then they did an impromptu like surprise gig on a 360-degree stage.
Yeah.
And did the first ever performing of Everything Now. I mean, I do get there is a part of the subject of the song is very kind of, it's quite preachy about modern life and in a bit of quite an obvious way. And they're starting to grate on me sometimes with that kind of holier than thou kind of attitude to everything. But it's just such a fun song and it just reminds me of dancing around with my mates to other really good Arcade Fire songs as well at Primavera.
Okay, on to track number two.
Slip Away by Perfume Genius.
Singing through your body, and I'm carried by the sound. Every drum, every single beat, they were born from your body, and I'm carried by the sound.
Hear this, it seems to be constructed from sounds that you wouldn't expect would as a whole make a brilliant pop song. It's a kind of like a really tinny drum sound and but somehow it just builds this beautiful
that's
sound.
That's what I quite like about the album as a whole, actually. There's loads of really interesting sounds and you just think, how did he think of all of those different kind of textures and things? But when it comes together, it's really sort of sumptuous and it's not really experimental, but it's very really interesting, isn't it? Like some things you've never heard before necessarily in a pop song.
Yeah, I think you would call it avant-garde for sure, but
maybe.
So catchy.
New York by St. Vincent.
New York isn't New York without you, love.
so far and a few blocks to be so low. And if I call you from First Avenue, we are the only motherfucker in the city who can handle me. New love wasn't true love, back to you. Love.
This is considered something of a departure for her. She's a bit of a guitar shredder, and this track itself is devoid of guitar. It's a bit of a move away to something slightly more. Certainly poppier, I think. Maybe it's a, is it a poppier, poppiest moment, perhaps?
It's not that, I wouldn't say it's that poppy. It's quite mellow, really.
It's very mellow.
But I guess in terms of like the chorusiness and the catchy hooks and stuff, maybe it is.
It's
but
a, there's other it's tracks like a ballad, isn't it? It's like a ballad.
Yeah, it is a ballad, but it's just very beautiful and it's quite moving, I think, in the chorus. And I heard her on an interview talking about it, I think, in her mind, and it doesn't specifically reference the loss of David Bowie, but I think that was something in her mind when she was writing the lyrics about it as well.
Now on to part-time DJ, full-time Joggo, Ian Wilkinson.
Passion Fruit by Drake.
Ritualistic, cleansing my soul of addiction for now, 'cause I'm falling apart.
It's catchy, Ian, but it's no Hotline Bling, is it?
I like this song for the same reason Hotline Bling is brilliant. I think that kind of lovelorn, slightly woozy, drunk sounding, yet melodic kind of sing-songy Drake is my favourite Drake. It's much better than when he's trying to be a gangster. He's an actor, and he puts all these things on, and I think this kind of Loverman Drake is as much of an act as gangster Drake.
Yeah.
But I find it a bit more convincing, and it's a hell of a tune.
It's a great pop tune. It never seemed to get dull. It did come on everywhere. It was all over the place, and it just worked everywhere.
But didn't make the same sort of impact chart-wise as something like One
Absolutely.
Dance.
Absolutely, yeah, of course.
What I also find quite interesting is it's got the same sound and melody as something like One Dance and a bit like Hotline Bling and a bit like Hold On We're Going Home, and yet it's produced by someone completely different entirely.
Yeah.
It's a guy called Nana Ruges. I think that's how you pronounce it. But to go with Drake's obsession with grime and British
and
road
British,
rap.
And British producers, yeah.
I met him through Section Boys.
Right.
The British hip-hop or road rap, as I think they like to be called, collective. Okay. And yet it does still have this kind of, it sounds like Drake.
Yeah.
Gwan by Rostam.
Don't listen to me, I only believe myself. So I'm going somewhere to do that alone. And then I see you, the light falls to the room, and all of it don't seem so hard.
Why this particular, quite gentle, slow, indie ballad, why this over one of the massive tunes that we've heard this year, Hookworm, Lindstrom, Bicep, Daphne?
It took me completely by surprise in that I'd written off Rostam solo stuff a bit, I think. I absolutely love the last Vampire Weekend album. I think it's one of the best albums of the last 10 years. And it's the last album that I think I could listen to all the way through and not dislike any of the tracks. There hasn't been an album like that for me this year or last year. Mm. And yet, I don't think I was really expecting much from him. And actually, the album itself, when it came out, was a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
But I felt this was like the oral equivalent of someone bringing you a cup of tea in bed on a really cold winter's day when you're nice and snug wrapped in a duvet. I listened to it a lot on the way to work to wake me up and a lot on the way back from work to wind down. And I think it's just perfect. It's so sleepy sounding. The orchestration's beautiful. And it is very gentle. But, I don't think his voice is as great as Ezra Koenig's in Vampire Weekend. And certainly the lyrics are a bit clunkier. But it just had a beautiful, warm sound to it. Here's a voice I hear by the Black Madonna.
This one because she was the standout DJ of this year?
Yeah, I think it's linked to the fact that she's had a monumentally good year, and I think it seems a bit like she's come from nowhere, and yet she's a complete dance music lifer. She's been working in and around the dance music industry for over two decades. So what seems like quite a meteoric rise is actually someone who's been working her ass off for a long, long time. And as a result, she's an absolute dance music historian. And I think what this track does really well for me is it just points at all those bits in dance music history and the ones that I love the most. I mean, when I listen to it, I can hear Larry Levan's long mixes and the kind of long mixes by people like Walter Gibbons and John Morales. There's a bit of Loose Joints and Dinosaur Alley in there, the Arthur Russell disco definitely stuff. Yeah. Frankie Knuckles, I think you can hear all over it. There's the Giorgio Moroder bass line. Mm. It's just all those dance music touch points. And if I'm honest, it's a bit crass. It's a bit obvious in places, isn't it? And it goes exactly where you want it to. And it pushes those buttons in a really quite methodical way. It certainly doesn't surprise you in the way something like Theme from Q by Object does, in the same way with these little curveballs here and there. It goes exactly where you expect it to. Yeah. But I think you can only do that well if you know your dance music really, really, really perfectly. And I think that's for me, that's what it does. It just, all the things that I love about listening to disco and house is wrapped up in one 10.5 minute song.
Next up, journalist and indie filmmaker Hazel Sheffield.
Wait in the Car by The Breeders.
First single, isn't it, since the original Breeders lineup from 24 years ago reformed?
Well, it's not quite the original Breeders lineup, but it is the Breeders lineup from when they did their second album, which was Last Splash in 1993, shortly before they took a long hiatus.
A huge hiatus, and have played gigs before, but not with this lineup.
That's right, and I think they even released their material in 2009.
Right.
But this is the first single with everyone back together.
And does that make a big difference?
Yeah.
Why?
I love it. I love the way she's like, good morning, at the beginning.
Yeah, that is.
And every time I hear it on the radio, it just makes my heart burst. Mm. I just feel like it's so refreshing to see a band come back after such a long time away and not be like apologetic or like Stephen Mackmas is always so bloody grumpy when he has to go back and play those Pavement shows. Yeah. You think of him chaining himself to his microphone in the last days of Pavement. And even the Pixies are sort of, you know, rehashing their old material. You know, they got back together to do Doolittle. Mm. And the Breeders are like, good morning!
We've got some new shit for you to listen to.
It is great. And she's like, wait in the car. I just look, there's so much like aggression to this song. I love it.
Yeah, that's cool. Can we expect an album then in 2018?
Do you know what? I don't know. I haven't read anything about an album, but I think I'd be foolish not to. Unless this was just some like magical studio moment. This all came together. Mm. I mean, I hope there's more.
Presumably there will be. All right, we'll move on to track number two.
Passion Fruit by Drake.
Listen. Do you prefer this sort of catchier Drake than the more glamorous sort of Drake to his rawer earlier sort of work?
Yeah, I mean, I figured out in the process of researching this why I love this song, which is that it's basically piano house.
Yes.
And I love piano. I'm like the biggest sucker for piano house, okay. Even though I didn't pick the Black Madonna.
Right.
I found this amazing video, actually, of the British producer, a guy called Nana Rokes, who made it.
Okay.
And he took you through all the different bits and how he cut up this electric piano to make the... Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. And then he also has a real piano underneath that as well. And I was like, boom, that's why I love the song so much.
Yeah.
I don't think of it in connection to like R&B necessarily.
No,
like, really.
It's totally different, isn't it? And he's quite a chameleon in that sense. I think certainly now in his later career, when he's almost become a bit of a parody of himself,
in a very positive
way, I think.
Yeah, I find it fascinating with all of these guys, like Kanye as well, the way they have all these producers and songwriters on staff. In this video where Nana Rokes was explaining how he'd done his bit, he said he didn't even know that Drake was using the song until just before it got released, which must be such a weird experience.
Oh, that's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so weird.
He's like a pop oligarch.
He is,
in a weird way now.
Imagine how many other producers were just sitting around being like, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah, absolute banger.
Yeah. Although it didn't do that well in the charts.
Oh, really?
I think it got to number 8 in the Billboard charts.
Okay.
But it wasn't like One Dance or something. It wasn't like the song of the year.
Or Hotline Bling.
Or Hotline Bling, exactly. And it didn't really make any, apart from like maybe Complex and stuff, it didn't make any real end of year lists, not mainstream ones.
My neighbour had it on all year, really loud.
Not your favourite song.
Usually when I put my music on quite loud, I'd hear this through the wall as a sort of like reply.
Wow.
As like an angry reply. Yeah, it was bizarre. Luckily, I do really like it, so shame on her. All right, on to your favourite song of the year.
Boys, Charlie XCX.
I was busy thinking about boys, boys, boys. I was busy dreaming about boys, boys, boys. Head is spinning thinking about boys. I need that bad boy to do me right on the Friday. And I need that go on to wake me up on the Sunday. That one from work can come over on Monday night.
So this is this track that won our Song of the Summer episode.
Yeah.
An episode that you won.
I think
I just wanted
to revisit my glory.
Excellent. Yeah, so you've obviously been listening to it the whole year, not just in the summer.
Yeah, and we listened to it a lot over Christmas. When it's dark and miserable, you just want to look at cute boys cuddling puppies. But I noticed that on lots of the end of year lists, it lost out to Green Light by Lorde, or was pipped to the post in a couple of the ones I read, certainly Enemy and The Guardian. I just think this is the superior song. I know that was like Lorde's big comeback song and about her like second album for her second album. And it was all about, you know, getting out after a breakup and experiencing the world again, but I just feel like Boys is the song of 2017. It's, you don't want to get out and experience the world right now. There's tons of shit to avoid.
Right.
Why not just stay in and watch your YouTube video of all those handsome men cuddling puppies and brushing their teeth and doing all these mundane things to make you feel better?
Now it's the turn of former editor of cigarross.co.uk, Paul McAllister.
Gwan by Rostam.
But all of these dreams keep coming back to me slowly.
So Rostam, previously of Vampire Weekend.
Yeah.
The
brains of the operation.
Apparently so. Finally branched out and produced a solo record this year.
Yeah, having been like a noted producer for a while. He's obviously worked with some big names.
We were speaking about him last year, weren't we? His collaboration with Hamilton Lighthouse.
Yeah, it's really good. He's
from
The Waterman.
From The Waterman.
He's also worked with Frank Ocean and Charlie XCX and Kylie Rae Jepsen as well.
Okay. Were you surprised to see him step out from behind the producer's desk?
No, because I think it was clear when he left Vampire Weekend that it was because he wanted to do his own thing.
And why this track from the album? Why is it the standout?
It's just absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful pieces of music I've heard in a long time. He's got a style of production that's quite sparse, but still quite warm, and it's got all the best bits of those Vampire Weekend tracks, but distilled down into like a perfect pop song.
And big focus on the cello in this track, comparison made to Arthur Russell.
Oh, yeah, I could see that,
A little bit, but potentially with more of a finger in the sort of pop side of things.
Yeah, definitely. And his vocals, he's not as strong a vocalist as Ezra Koenig, but there's a kind of charming vulnerability about the way he delivers the lines.
Yeah.
And it's just delightful. Evolution by Kelly Lee Owens.
Evolution.
So, from Kelly Lee Owens' eponymous debut album, she's taken the dance and electronic music scene by storm this year. Huge album. Very hard to choose an outright favourite from the album.
It's almost impossible, and if we did this again next week, I might choose something different. But the album itself is just absolutely phenomenal, and I've listened to this album and all of the tracks on this album more than I think anything else this year.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to have one of her songs in my top three.
This one's a little bit more dance floor focused, I think, compared to others. It's pretty banging from early on right the way through.
Yeah, the album's quite light in places. There's a few that are proper sort of fourth and floor dance floor fillers, but it's got the mix of the kind of pop and the dance floor stuff as well.
Why do you think she called it Evolution? We said in a podcast a while back with Karen Guire, who chose her techno track titles as an affront to the wanky techno track titles that you do get in most other albums. And is she guilty of it here? She does strike me as someone who does possibly have a sense of humour.
Yeah, I think she does. I mean, they're all very short single word song titles, I think, almost all of them.
So she pressed and released all her own vinyl this year to release the album. She's been working at Pure Groove Records, which is a record shop. So she's done it the hard way and getting a lot of acclaim, a lot of recognition. There's been a lot of end of year lists.
Yeah, a lot of acclaim, although that wasn't borne out the first time I saw her live this year. She was playing at a festival in Gothenburg way out west, which the scheduling of which is an absolute shambles. And she was put on at 11 o'clock, but well away from the main festival site in the kind of after dark venue, which was a good half an hour away from the main festival. So I left like during one of the headlines. I think it was Major Lazer headlining on that night. I trekked off on my own to go and see her. One of three people in the room when she came out. She looked pretty pissed off, really understandably. And was then beset by technical problems throughout and had to abandon the set 20 minutes in.
Right.
But she came and spoke to the three of us that had come to sort of apologise and just sort of asked why there was no one here. Sort of tried to explain about the scheduling thing. And you know, she was a bit put out that they brought her all this way and put her at a time which nobody was going to see her.
She also displayed quite a nice sense of humour when we tweeted her with my own interpretation of the album cover.
Yeah.
It was essentially just a black and white image of me with a wig on, sort of leaning over a bit.
She liked it so much that she liked it at the time, and then a few days later sort of retweeted it again, still laughing at it.
It was a grower.
It was a grower, yeah. Negative Space by Hookworms.
So these are a five-piece psychedelic noise rock band.
Yeah, from Leeds.
From Leeds. And their earlier stuff has been quite experimental. They're very renowned as a live band.
Yeah, they're very psych, very noisy, vocals quite low in the mix, lots of kind of feedback. And
then this is the first track from an upcoming album, which is due out 2018.
Microshift, yeah. Right. It's due out in, I think, February on Domino.
It sounds like an instant indie classic.
Yeah, it does. It should be the song that kind of catapults them into the mainstream. Whether they want that to happen or not, I don't know. But it's like the vocals are much higher in the mix. You can kind of hear what he's singing this time. Mm. Although given some of the lyrical content, it's whether you kind of want to hear it. I don't know, it's quite distressing to listen to in places.
So he quite a troubled individual.
Yeah, perhaps. And a lot of sort of themes of anxiety and mental health issues in their songs.
Right.
And this song seems to be about the breakdown of a relationship, and it's quite sort of bearing his soul quite openly, and yeah, it's quite difficult to listen to. But then the music itself is just euphoric.
Yeah,
like gone four to the floor, quite a departure in their sound. It's like much more danceable and uplifting, and yeah, it's quite a departure.
It'd be amazing if the rest of the album now follows suit and is all equally.
Well, it does. Yeah, luckily we've got a few contacts on the rest of Noise that one of them works at Domino, so we've had the album for a month or two now.
Oh, right,
and it's absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Now it's the turn of music, travel and lifestyle journalist Richie McKicken, who we appear to have recorded in an echo chamber.
As the World Caves In by Matt Maltese.
My feet are aching and your back is pretty tired, and we've drunk a couple bottles, babe, and set our grief aside. The paper says doomsday, the button has been pressed. We're gonna nuke each other up, boys, till old Satan stands impressed. And here it is, our final night alive. And as the earth burns to the ground, oh girl, it's you.
Yeah, Matt Maltese, an artist that you've championed on The Rest Is Noise before, gaining a lot of traction this year, being comparisons to Rufus Wainwright. The Enemy called him the UK's answer to Father John Misty.
Yeah, but he's not a twat. Yeah, I mean, I thought long and hard about what to choose for this, but I knew, and Spotify proved to me that I'd listened to this song over and over and over and over again, which on one listen to it, you can work out why. As a song that encapsulates the year, I'd be hard pushed to find a better one. Essentially an apocalyptic love tale based very much in these times.
Mm, yeah, explain the characters that he covers in the lyrics.
Well, he jokes. I had the pleasure of seeing him live this year, a really intimate show at the Groucho, actually. It was remarkable. And he actually introduced the song as being a love story between Theresa May and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if before I'd heard him do that, I thought it was just a really sweet kind of nihilistic love song, like the world's fucked, we're gonna die, but at least someone's here next to me watching TV with me.
Yeah.
But then that kind of put a spin on it, a really demented, twisted, dark spin on it, which I kind of liked.
Yeah.
For this sort of slightly
twisted, demented time.
I mean, yeah, really. So maybe it works. But with this sort of slightly grandiose feel to it, musically. Sunscreen by Ginger and George.
So one is Scottish, the other is French, and you've taken this from an album called European Repetitive Beats.
I have, which came out early this year. Cool and laid back and repetitive and European and electronic, but with this miserable Scottish vocal singing about the summer. And it just ticked every every box.
Every conceivable box.
Yeah. And this song is very, very much. Not many do it. You know it's a good song when you wish it lasted longer.
Mm.
This is like 3:50 or something.
And it keeps introducing new elements. Yeah. And that keeps you interested.
I just always want this song to go on longer. It's Black Scream by LCD Sound System.
LCD Sound System's comeback album. This is the 12-minute album closer. Why this one?
Well, I really wrestled with this. I kind of, in my head, I always separate sort of favourite songs of the year and favourite albums. But I kind of couldn't separate the two things this year. I couldn't come up with my favourite songs without choosing something from that record. It just meant a lot to me this year. I have a funny relationship with fandom. I find it bizarre.
Mm.
And Star Wars was a brilliant example this year that you can't just make a movie because fans go fucking mental and like nothing will ever be right. And I've never really bought that. But I am, I guess, a proper LCD Sound System fan in the fact that they can do whatever they want and I'll be pretty interested. So I did get that feeling back, which I haven't had for years, of huge anticipation and excitement for this record. And I was lucky enough to go the week before the album came out to a Columbia Records playback of the record at Abbey Road. And we just sat in a room with some booze and some nibbles, and they just played the record in full. And there were some really remarkable moments. You know, when you listen to it like that first time and how you kind of experience. And as it ebbed and flowed, probably in a better way than any LCD record ever has, I kind of found myself really anticipating the last track because certainly from their second album onwards, they've really nailed
that
kind of ending. New York, I Love You and Home, almost a kind of a bit of a centre point of the album, or at least a counterpart to the other sort of thematic big track further in. And when this came on, it's got that kind of sonar beat that runs through it. And for all the talk about this record and David Bowie, to hear what is essentially just a really open, raw, honest kind of ode to David Bowie, but in the context of him being James Murphy's friend, I just found staggering. And I think for me, what made it the song of 2017 was, first off, how it dealt with that, the biggest seismic moment of music in 2016, which is probably the death of David Bowie.
Mm.
And it again reminded me why I loved LCD Sound System so much, lyrically especially. The lines in this, couldn't make our wedding day, too sick to travel, bang. There's no poetry in that, but already I'm heartbroken. And then, I owe you dinner, man. I owe you something. Like, the line, I owe you dinner, man, I don't care whether it's Bowie or anyone, like, the idea that somebody has been lost and you're using the most mundane, ordinary language just completely floored me. And then as it pans out, he touches on his feelings about kind of pulling out of producing Black Star. Obviously the song's called Black Screen. There's so many references. It's certainly not hidden, I don't think.
No.
You know, this is a very straight up. There's that bit which some people thought was a humble brag. I just didn't. The bit where he kind of gets thrilled because David Bowie responds to his emails quickly. I mean, I think that's just, if you ever become close with your hero, you're still going to get excited by these things. And I just thought it was such a great, if you look at all the other LCD records, there's always these nods to the heroes, both lyrically and reference-wise and musically. And here is just kind of this straight-up pain to one that he befriended. And what I thought was really interesting, he'd originally conceived it to have a spoken word. It's got a really long outro, this song. And it was supposed to have a spoken word outro by Lou Reed.
Okay.
And then Lou Reed died. And he thought, oh, well, it would be cool to get Leonard Cohen to do it. And then Leonard Cohen died. So then he thought, fuck it, I'm not going to think of anyone else because they're all going to die.
And last but not least, Calopegian philosopher Nathan Lee.
Blacked Out by AJ Tracy.
Sounds of the surf. Tracksuit grey, black, blue. I was just a hopeful kid like you. Left ends broke, got a win, can't lose. Everything fresh when I came back through. Saying that it raw, brother, that's not true. I am not second, but I am top two. See me in a club with a team, then blacked out. So you know I gotta wear black top two. Tracksuit grey, black, blue. I was just a hopeful kid like you. Left ends broke, got a win, can't lose. Everything fresh when I came back through. Saying that it raw, brother, that's not true. I am not second, but I am top two. See me in a club.
Big year for grime, 2017. Why this song in particular?
Well, I suppose I could have chosen a number of songs. Fundamentally, this was my summer jam, I think. I think it was released in late July. I chose this particular track, because it's a bit of a banger. And AJ Tracy was one of a number of grime artists in 2017 who came out and vocally supported Jeremy Corbyn. And I'm not backing it just because he backed Jeremy Corbyn. But I think 2017 was a year in which we saw politics, direct politics, come back into music again. And what better representation than AJ Tracy, a man who spoke very clearly about to his audience about supporting Corbyn in the election and for very valid reasons, but also spoke very eloquently and intelligently post-Grenfell as well. Mm. So I felt like he and this piece of music was a good representation of 2017. Guan by Rostam.
Go on. Why did it stand out on this album for you?
I think with Rostam, he, as well as had a couple of big years, not least because he soundtracked The OA, a really brilliant drama series on Netflix, late 2016. But I think this is his first record post Vampire Weekend, and for my money, he's the driving creative genius behind the best stuff that Vampire Weekend did, and this is the best distillation of what he's good at. Mm. I found the album sadly kind of disappointing, but this just hits all the right musical notes for Rostam's.
It's not like he's been silent since Vampire Weekend. He's also in a very successful collaboration called Discovery.
Oh, I haven't heard that actually.
Oh, you need to check out Discovery. About 2013, 2014, they were quite active. Sort of electronic soul, a little bit different to Vampire Weekend and very different to what he's doing now in his solo work. But spent a lot of time behind the producing desk as well, and working with people like Hamilton Lighthouser,
Beyonce,
and of course Beyonce and Frank Ocean. So do you think his future lies behind the production desk, or do you think now with the success of this album he will now start to become a solo artist in his own right?
I don't know, I've yet to evaluate the album properly, but I don't think it's that great. I think he's probably better as a producer, and I actually in research for this podcast I watched his performance of Guan on Conan, and it's true to say his voice is much, much weaker live than it is
right
on record, and I wonder if that could sustain him for his own solo project. That's perhaps why he chose to pair up with someone like Hamilton Lighthouser in previous albums. Ghosts of My Life by Ruffage Crew.
Not from 2017, but it was reissued, right, in 2017?
That's right. So it was originally released in 1994. And the people behind Ruffage Crew include Goldie and Andy Hepworth. So I think it was re-released in 2017. I think it was remastered by Doc Scott or Metal, the record label Metalheads, which is what Goldie's record label. Yeah, so I understand it. It's a bit of a off-kilter.
What's the significance for it this year then?
So some listeners may know that a cultural theorist, blogger, music critic called Mark Fisher died very early in 2017 in somewhat, well, tragic circumstances. And he himself wrote a book in 2014 called Ghosts of My Life, Writings on Depression, Hauntology and Lost Futures. And Mark's death affected me quite strongly, and also, there is a political significance again to this music, to Mark's work, and to what Jungle promised, but was never delivered. A lost future, Mark Fisher would call it. Sort of hinted at a lost future that was never hit upon.
Yeah, I think one of his quite famous interviews for The Wire was with Burial. Burial really opened up to him, and not many of us had heard much from Burial until that point, and that's quite a significant moment. And Hauntology, obviously Burial works within that genre, you could argue, and Ghosts of My Life just seems to, although he's borrowing that title from a much earlier track, both Burial has been inspired and influenced by that. There are clearly ghosts in his music. But the ghosts here you're suggesting could also be a metaphor for mental health issues that he faced as well. Does he touch on that?
So he does talk. He talks. His central thesis in Ghosts of My Life and in other books revolves around this idea of capitalist realism, which I think prior to 2017 would have really hit the nail on the head. That is this widespread sense that there is no possible alternative to the version of capitalism that we're currently living in. And what happens when culturally we have that widespread sense is that the possibility of new futures are foreclosed. Mm. Mark Fisher uses a Franco Bernardi quote called the slow cancellation of the future, which the economic conditions under which we live influence and shape our culture. So we're in a stage now, and again, if you reflect back on other cultural events of 2017, we're in a stage now where you might argue, Mark Fisher certainly did, that since the early 90s, culture has been really unable to create many things, if anything, new. Mm. I think Jungle, this particular track and Jungle in general, Mark argues that, listen, I don't know anything about it, but I don't know much about Jungle at all. I wasn't a fan growing up. In fact, I probably kind of shunned it because I think I was trying to escape my sort of working class roots and embed myself within a middle class kind of culture. And Jungle is often associated with urban working class identity. I listened to this track for the first time a few weeks ago, and it sounded like it was from another time. It sounds alien. And again, Fisher talks about the development of culture over periods. And if you compare 1974 to 1994 and the huge musical development that took place between that period, and again and I'm not saying progression here, I'm not saying things got better, I'm saying new things happened.
Yeah,
we saw new forms of music emerging, even if they failed, even if it didn't quite work, we were seeing new things. Similarly, from 54 to 74, Mark says, you know,
yeah,
compare late Delta blues stuff, electric blues stuff, with what we're seeing from Bowie, etc., in 74, and do the same between 1994, 1997 and 2017, and I think you'll have a hard time identifying those new emergent forms. Genuinely, genuinely new emergent forms. Now, I can think of a couple, for instance, grime, but that was in the early 2000s, really, when that first really emerged. And even that was kind of predicated on hip-hop. But it sounded new, and the methods of creation also influenced it as well. But
so do you think by choosing a track which actually came out in 1994 for your favourite song of 2017, are you making a political statement there somehow?
Well, I don't know if... I mean, I feel like it's a reminder of the lost futures that, you know, post-2017, now we might be able to catch a glimpse of. Those futures might now be available to us when we've seen that there is a political alternative, and it's not that radical. It's social. It's sort of vaguely left-wing social democracy. I think there's a poignancy, a great sadness, a huge amount of melancholy around the fact that Mark died just 6 months before the visage of capitalist realism was destroyed or began to break down. We saw there was an alternative, and I think Goldie, Ruffage Crew. Hints, reminds us again that there are alternatives. And in 2017, we basically said we don't need to accept this realism that we're offered, this capitalist realism we're offered, economically and politically speaking. But maybe in 2018, one of the things we can do is not accept the culture that we're offered.
So, plenty of love there for Rostam, whose song Gwan was selected by no fewer than three people, and Drake's Passion Fruit, which was chosen by both Ian and Hazel. But out of the resulting pool of 16 songs, which one would be our song of 2017?
I'm going to choose Boys by Charlie XCX. And my reason is it's the only song on the list that I actually know, that I actually remember listening to. But also, it is brilliant and the video is amazing. So I think it's deserved.
I'm going to choose Kelly Lowen's Evolution, because that has come from one of my albums of the year. I think the Kelly Lowen self-titled album is a really brilliant sort of techno album. Not quite banging techno, but it's just an amazing listen all the way through. So I'm going to choose Evolution by Kelly Lowen, and I bet I know who chose that.
The Black Madonna. It soundtracks some of the best nights out in clubs that I've had. Seeing her at a residency at XOYO was just absolutely phenomenal.
I'm going to choose Hookworms.
Okay.
Because I'm so excited for that album next year.
It's got to be He Is the Voice I Hear by Black Madonna. Just some really joyous dance floor moments to it this year. I think she's a remarkable talent. I think also really at face value musically, that's just some incredible playing on that, and just its construction and its nod to
everything,
like really like old classic kind of disco, but it just sounds so now and euphoric. And again, in a kind of really shitty year, having something that deliciously euphoric deserves all the props I can give, I think.
He's the Voice I Hear by the Black Madonna. Because actually, that track was very close to hitting my top three, right. And it was very difficult to decide. And in the end, it just came down to wanting to talk about other things. But this is an amazing tune.
So there you have it. Our song of 2017 is "He's the Voice I Hear" by the Black Madonna. Well done, Ian. Listen to all the songs chosen this episode, plus a whole bonanza of other great tunes from 2017 in the Spotify playlist you'll find at our website, therestisnoise.org. Thanks for listening to us babble on about the weird and wonderful from the world of music this year. We hope it's inspired you to some new discoveries. We'll be soundtracking more concepts, people, persons, places and things throughout 2018.
all of us here have a very happy new year.